Hey there, I'm Star Master Jeff of the Dark Star Adventure Cast, a sci-fi actual play where every choice matters, every danger is real, and nothing stays buried in the dark between the stars. Follow the crew of the Scapegoat through heists, gang wars, and something ancient moving through the void. Critics call it lean, cinematic, and immersive. New episodes every other Tuesday at darkstaradventures.com, and keep following that signal.
The following episode will contain the names of people and places set in the fictional world of the Hyborian Age. With that in mind, be aware that Stephen has an uncanny knack for pronouncing many of these names incorrectly. Listener discretion is advised.
You know who you are?
Stephen is my name. Even Stephen.
Will you say something, Stephen?
Stephen or else media.
Conan, still traveling west to Zamora, stumbles upon an injured man who guides the Cimmerian to a lost city with promises of riches beyond compare. You know, if he survives the trip. Hello and welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jewel thrones of Hyboria beneath its sneakered feet, one comic book at a time. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and you know what? Before we jump all over this month's issue, I actually have a bit of listener feedback. So, what do you say? You want to do that? Because I sure do. Let's do it. Okay, before we actually get to the feedback, there's something you need to know about me, which is that when I make plans to do anything with any of my podcasts, there's a surefire way of ensuring that those plans never actually come to fruition. And that's for me to announce that I'm planning on doing something. I haven't done it yet. I haven't started, but I have an idea. And so I announce, hey, I'm going to do this. And 9 times out of 10, I never end up doing it. For example, all the way back in September of 2024, I had announced that I was going to be sitting down with my son and his friend Joe to watch Conan the Destroyer. And then we were going to record an episode talking about the movie. But more than that, I had announced that I would be holding a contest at the same time. I called it the Colossally Cool Hither Came Conan Question Contest. And well, it never actually happened. I never watched Conan the Destroyer with my son and his friend Joe. We never recorded an episode about it. And so the Colossally Cool Hither Came Conan question contest never happened. In the meantime, I got a number of questions from, well, one listener, Lee Peacock, and they have just been sitting there in my inbox unanswered. So I wanted to take some time here and maybe, I don't know, over the course of the next 2 or 3 episodes, answer those questions. But first, Lee, I did reply back a few days ago, last week, depends on when you're listening to this episode or when it comes out. But make sure you look at that, because technically, even though I never held the contest, you are the only one that submitted questions. And so you win the prize, which is that Conan trade paperback from the original, not the original, the first Conan trade after Marvel got the license back. So yeah, check out that email if you want that trade, respond to the email. Anyway, here we go. 3 questions from Lee Peacock. Question number 1.
Other than Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jason Momoa, which actor, past or present, would you like to see portray Conan the Barbarian?
That's a really good question, because I'm super terrible at casting people and remembering even seeing actors and actresses and what their names are and all that junk. But there was a time that I would have said Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Seriously, there was a time I would have said that. But these days, I don't know, I don't think I would be able to take him seriously in the role. Yeah, I do like the idea of, I've heard the names Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson. I've heard those names thrown out there for playing Conan. I think either would be good, though. I think Alan Ritchson would be best of the two of them. Alan Ritchson, by the way, he's the guy that plays Jack Reacher on the Amazon series. I've also heard the name Florian Montiano thrown out as an option for Conan. He's the guy that played Razor Fist in the Shang-Chi movie, and he might be good as well. But honestly, I think if they're going to do a Conan movie or a Conan TV show, which I would prefer, I'd love to have a streaming service give us, you know, a Netflix or a Hulu or whatever, give us a Conan series. That would be freaking awesome. But if they do, I would like to see them get somebody to play Conan, somebody that we've never seen before, you know, a fresh face, somebody who's not going to take me personally. This is just selfish, but somebody who's not going to take me out of the movie because I can't get beyond any of the other roles that they may have played. You know, if that makes any sense at all.
That all makes perfect sense.
Question number two.
Of the three of you, who would be able to last the longest in one-on-one combat with Conan?
Well, since the other two aren't here, I'm not going to speak for them, but I'm pretty sure that I would be the first one to fall. And that's only because I'm old and I'm out of shape, while my son and Joe are, well, they're both young and spry. Honestly, I think all three of us, if confronted with Conan carrying a sword, maybe an axe, I think all three of us would just run. And of course, I'd be the first person. If he came after us, I'd be the first person he'd catch, because again, I'm old and slow. Beyond that, between Simon, my son, and his friend Joe, I don't know. I would root for Simon, of course, but I would like to think that instead of having to go one-on-one with Conan in combat, we'd go hang out with him at a tavern or something. I mean, maybe not me. I don't like to socialize, but, you know, Joe and Simon, they could.
Party on, dudes!
Question number three.
Have you ever wondered why Conan has no visible tattoos?
Honestly, no. I've never really thought about it. Of course, if you look at the Conan that I use, the guy that I use in my podcast cover art, he's got a tattoo that shows his love for Crom, but nah, never really thought about it. I suppose if I did bend my mind to it, I would say that maybe as a Sumerian, maybe there's something culturally about his people that don't believe in tattoos. And so maybe that's why he doesn't have one. Or maybe he just doesn't care that, you know, he's got a piece of art on his bicep or something. You know, I would say back in the Hyborian Age, anybody who has tattoos, it's probably for reasons other than why most folks get tattoos nowadays. You know, if somebody gets a tattoo nowadays, it's because they want to show off the art on their arm or their chest or their bicep or their calf or whatever. There are very few people anymore who get tattoos because culturally it's something that their people do. Or maybe it's a, you know, like a warrior class type thing. That's if anybody's got tattoos in the Hyborian Age, I would assume that would be why. You know, maybe a religious sect has to tattoo certain things on their bodies for certain reasons. Wizards tattoo runes on their body to help cast spells, stuff like that. But Conan, I would postulate that as a Sumerian, maybe the Sumerians just don't do the tattoos. Yeah, that's my answer. And
a tattoo. I'm getting a tattoo.
So there you go. Three questions and three answers. There will be at least three more questions in the next episode. And hey, if you want to join in, you can send your questions to feedback@hithercameconan.com. Or if you want to answer any of the questions from today's episode yourself and have me share those answers out on a show, again, feedback@hithercameconan.com. Until then, today we're diving into Conan the Barbarian number 40 from Marvel Comics. This issue sports a cover date of July 1974, though it hit the stands in April. It sold for just 25 cents, and it is entitled The Fiend from the Forgotten City. It was written by Roy Thomas with art by Rich Buckler. The inks were by Ernie Chan. The letters were by Gene Sameka. And the colorist was Linda Lessman.
Into the boat!
Conan is crossing the sun-scorched wastes between Turin and Zamora when he stumbles upon a dying traveler. The old man, Libro, begs Conan to lead him to the lost city of Abba Ben Zarr, a place he swears is full of unclaimed treasure. Conan is suspicious, but he agrees. And when they reach the city, he tells Libro to wait on the outskirts while he goes on in to take a look.
Oh man, I gotta see this!
The ruined streets are littered with bones, a sight that intrigues the beefy barbarian, and yet also gives him a minor case of the willies. He slips up to a building and spies through the window where a fire flickers and voices argue. A band of thieves has already found the place and are piling up their spoils. A noise at the door sends the thieves bursting out, but Conan is quicker than they expect. He slips away and collides with a woman named Alonia, the source of the commotion. Together, they flee the thieves, only to run back into Libro, who has come into town despite Conan's earlier command. There's a history between Alonia and the old man, but Conan's attention is still on the glittering hoard he'd spied back at the thieves' camp to notice. Specifically, all he can think about is a large diamond the size of his fist. Conan leaves Alonia with Libro and makes his way back to the building where the thieves kept their hoard and slays the one man left behind to guard it. Before he can begin gathering his reward, however, the rest of the brigands arrive and a brutal fight erupts. Outnumbered, Conan fights his way free and manages to escape with the diamond as the thieves give chase. The chase ends quickly, however, when Libro summons a terrible demon that lays into the thieves with deadly results, before seizing Conan in crushing hands. But one of the thieves still clings precariously to life, and with his last breath, throws a knife into Libro's back, killing the old man. Alonia rushes forward and reaches out, touching the demon gently as Conan, still gripped in the monster's colossal hand, strikes at the beast with his sword, and the demon shatters as if it were made from glass. Conan demands to know who Alonia really is, but she only wants the massive diamond that the Cimmerian took. He gives it to her as payment for saving his life, and she celebrates, for the diamond is actually a lifestone that Libro had once held to have power over her. Now that she has it back once again, she reveals her true identity. She is the goddess Ishtar, imprisoned long ago by Libro. Restored, she decrees that no precious stone shall ever leave the city of Abba Ben Zarr, her city, and then she drifts away into the stars. Conan begins to gather up the glittering hoard when, with the quiet prudence of a seasoned survivor, decides not to tempt fate, leaving the city and the treasure behind. All right, so The Fiend from the Forgotten City was adapted from a plot by Michael Resnick, who at the time was credited in the issue only as the author of the novel The Goddess of Ganymede, which was published in 1968. Now, myself, I've honestly never heard of this guy, but looking at his Wikipedia page, it turns out this dude was quite prolific. Born in Chicago in 1942, he wrote more than 70 novels, published over 25 collections, and edited more than 40 anthologies. He won 5 Hugo Awards and 1 Nebula Award. He was the executive editor of the defunct magazine Jim Bain's Universe and the creator and editor of the Galaxy's Edge magazine. He also wrote over 200 erotic adult novels under various pseudonyms and edited 3 men's magazines and 7 tabloid newspapers. But that's not all. For over a decade, he wrote a weekly column about horse racing and a monthly column about purebred collies, which he and his wife both bred and showed. Michael Resnick passed away from cancer on January 9th, 2020, and since, the Michael Resnick Memorial Award was established in 2021 in Resnick's honor, sponsored by Dragon Con and publisher Ark Manor. Anyway, back in mid-1971, Roy had begun inviting other sci-fi fantasy writers to write up plots for some Conan issues. We had John Jakes on issue number 13, Web of the Spider God, and we had, of course, Michael Moorcock, along with his friend James Cawthorn, on issues 14 and 15, A Sword Called Stormbringer, and The Green Empress of Melnibone.
Nice hat!
Well, that's where The Fiend from the Forgotten City came from, a plot by Michael Resnick, as requested by Roy. However, while the plot that Resnick submitted could have been turned into a full 19-page story for the Conan the Barbarian series, Roy actually had other plans. See, he shortened the tale to just 15 pages, and had originally meant for it to appear in giant-sized Conan number 1, which was published in June of 1974. However, as I mentioned in the feedback portion of the episode, plans have a way of unraveling, and so they instead used giant-sized Conan number 1 to publish a 26-page adaptation of Robert E. Howard's epic Conan tale, Hour of the Dragon. And that's why The Fiend from the Forgotten City was published here in Conan the Barbarian number 40. Yet it was still just 15 pages, and the typical full-color Conan the Barbarian story was 19. And so that's why this issue has a backup tale, which is The Changeling by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, which was originally published in Journey into Mystery number 86 from September of 1962. We will not be talking about The Changeling, as it is not a Conan story. But one last bit of information. Conan mentions during the story that it's been 3 years since he's been to Zamora. It was something that I talked about in the last episode, but it's actually here in issue 40 where he says it. Anyway, in issue 1, The Coming of Conan, all the way back in July of 1970, it's revealed that Conan was born not 20 winters ago, which would have made him 20 years old when the series began. Conan first arrives in Zamora, in the city of Oranjan, in Conan the Barbarian number 4, The Tower of the Elephant, from January of 1971. He remains in Zamora, traveling to an unnamed village in issue number 5, Zakula's Daughter, and then faces off against a giant bat in Shadazar in issue 6, Devil Wings Over Shadazar, before then leaving for Nemedia in issue number 7, The Lurker Within. Now, of course, we don't know how long he was actually in Zamora, only that as of issue 40, it's been 3 years since he'd left. But I figured he wasn't there too long, maybe a month, maybe two. And if we assume that, we can also assume that he is now, as of this issue, issue number 40, about 23 to 24 years old. That is, of course, just an educated guess, folks. Take that as you will. But with that said, grab up your copies of Conan the Barbarian number 40, because we are about to dive. All right, so as usual, we start with the cover. This cover was penciled by Rich Buckler, inks by Ernie Chan, and it features Conan front and center as normal, and he's battling a great big bunch of dudes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys, all in furs and with swords, and he's got, of course, in front of him, Mirage, or a half-naked lady in a torn-up dress that he is protecting from these dudes. There is a woman in the issue, but this is not her. The most striking thing, however, of this cover is right behind Conan. It takes up a big portion of the cover. It's the background, basically. It's a big red demon face. It's got red horns, yellow eyes with red pupils, yellow teeth. Looks really scary. It reminds me a lot of the devil mask worn by Ogun and then Kitty Pride in the 1982 six-issue Marvel limited series Kitty Pride and Wolverine, which, hey, plug, I'm talking about over on the Comic Book Super Show with my Superman Super Show co-host, Ed Moore. So yeah, go check that out.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Who's editing? A thought experiment in which Siskoid and his guest appoint themselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on them, because they can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. Great ideas? Yes, we think so. Cool reinventions? Of course. Crisis fatigue? We guarantee it. Who's Editing? Now on its own feed, only at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Révolution, est comme une
révélation. Do you love podcasting but hate editing? Do you have a number of episodes recorded but just can't find the time to get them edited and ready for release? Do you need help and you're not sure what to do? Well, come talk to me. My name is Stephen Orr. I have over a decade of experience recording and editing my own podcasts, and I want to put those skills to work for you. I can remove that background noise. I can reduce silences. I'll remove all of your ums and your uhs, as well as your throat clearing, sneezes, and coughs and such. And I can even add your music and whatnot. And hey, my prices are quite reasonable. Check out edityourpod.com to get started. That's edityourpod.com, or just reach out to me directly. Email edityourpod@gmail.com. Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you how I can help. And more importantly, I'll quote you a cost. edityourpod.com. Get started today.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
I rather like the cover, mainly because of the big red demon devil face thing in the background. It looks really creepy. It looks really scary. It does have a nostalgic element to it because it does remind me of the devil mask from Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, which I read when I was 10. But to me, it's very striking. This would stand out to me on a rack, on a spinner rack. We get into the issue, the first page of the story, and we have a splash page. It's Conan on horseback, and the horse is reeling up. It's on its hind legs as Conan leans out of the saddle to pluck a piece of red fabric, a shred of cloth that has been wedged among some rocks. It's here that we get the title, because this is the title page, The Fiend from the Forgotten City. It tells us that it is adapted from a plot by Michael Resnick, author of Goddess of Ganymede. And there's a bit here, a bit of narration, a caption, if you would, that, I don't know, I question, only because, well, it says,
along the northernmost reaches of the Nameless Desert, which lies like a broadsword between Turin and the Hyborian kingdoms, a great black steed is reined to a sudden halt by its sun-bronzed rider.
And that ends with three dots, which I think is an ellipsis, and then an asterisk. Typically, in a comic book, if you see a bit of dialogue or narration or a caption that's followed by an asterisk, your eyes immediately go to the bottom of the page, especially at this time during the Bronze Age of comics. Your eyes immediately go to the bottom of the page to look for the editor's note. That's what that asterisk usually denotes, that something within that caption box or that narration box or that dialogue, something in there, usually it's something that harkens back to an earlier issue. And so there's an editor's note. They put an editor's note to tell you this happened in Conan the Barbarian, blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing. There's no editor's note. There's nothing to align with that asterisk other than up top where it has the credits. There is an asterisk between each section of credits, but that can't have anything to do with this narration. So I'm really confused about it. When I originally read this issue, I read it through the Epic collection that I own. And I just assumed maybe for some reason when they reprinted the issue for the Epic collection, they just removed the editor's note for some reason. But here I am looking at an actual scan of this First page, the title page, the splash page, and it's the scan of the original issue, and there's nothing. I don't understand the point of the asterisks at all. Maybe, I don't know, maybe because this was meant originally to go into giant-sized Conan number one, that, I don't know, I have no idea. I just find it weird that there's an asterisk there, and it means absolutely nothing to me.
That is weird. You're right.
Anyway, we turn the page, page two. Conan is looking at this red bit of cloth that he's pulled from out from under these rocks. And he sees that it's silk, Khitan silk, to be exact. And he's really kind of excited about it because only a very wealthy person would wear Khitan silk. And so as he's out there in the desert, apparently he's out of water. He's out of wine. And he's hoping that he'll run across this rich guy who will give him a flagon of wine because he is in need of a drink. And then he postulates that maybe the guy might also have a purse full of jingling gold that, you know, that Conan can beat him up or kill him and steal from him. He's saying this all out loud, talking to his horse, I guess. And he not only does he hope to find this guy for wine or water because he's thirsty, he wants the gold. He wants a big pouch of gold, a big purse of gold, because he is going back to the city of thieves over there in Zamora, which I believe is Erengen. It's also known as the city of thieves. And he mentions here that he's not been back for 3 years. And the last time he was there, he led a starveling life, which I assume means that he was low on money, poor, starving. And he wants to roll into Zamora with a fat purse of gold. He wants to be a fat cat in Zamora. However, when he finally comes across the man who was wearing the chiton silk, he's half dead. He's lying in the desert. He's collapsed. And so Conan is kind of upset. And in fact, what he says is,
"Curses be to Crom. From the look of things, that bag of bones won't be any more good to me than he is to himself."
And so he calls out to the guy and jumps off his horse. He goes to help the dude, or to find out if he needs help or whatever he might be able to offer the guy, which apparently isn't much because he doesn't have any wine or gold. But the guy, he tells him that his name is Libro and that he seeks a lost citadel called Abba Benzar. It's a city that all men have forgotten about, except for him, of course. And he was riding there on horseback, but his horse died from underneath him. And so he had hoped to make it to the city, to this lost city, by foot. And yeah, he's an old man. He didn't make it. And so he begs Conan,
"Take me there, barbarian. Take me there, I say, and you shall have a treasure undreamed of."
Turn the page, page number 3 of the story, and Conan is now super interested.
"Now you begin to interest me, but if you're lying..."
"I'm not, trust me."
The last man who said that was meanwhile reaching inside his robe for a dagger.
But Conan pats him down. He doesn't find a knife on him, and so he helps the guy up onto his horse, and they keep moving on, the guy giving him directions as they go. It takes 3 days, but at last they arrive at the dead city of Abba Benzar. They stop at the outskirts where there are some pillars out there in the sand with weird carvings all over them. And Conan, again, he's really excited. He's really hoping that the tales that this guy have been telling him for the past 3 days are true. And if they are, that there should be enough treasure there for the both of them. The old guy's telling him it's true. It is true. I wouldn't lie. I know that it's true, but how I know that has to remain a secret. And Conan, I don't know what's going on with Conan in this issue. He's making dumb decision after dumb decision because he's not a stranger to looting lost cities. Every time he has gone to a lost city in the past to try to grab treasure from it, something bad always happens and he fights a dragon or dead soldiers or whatever. And so here he is with the promise of another massive hoard of wealth in another lost city. And all he can think about is the treasure, because the fact that this old guy tells him that he knows that there's treasure there, but how he knows it has got to remain a secret, that should at the very least trigger something within Conan, some suspicion. However, Conan just responds that whatever the secret is, basically, he doesn't care to learn it. All he wants is the treasure, and he tells Libro to stay there in the outskirts, there at the outskirts by the pillars, because Conan's going to go in, and he's going to get him that treasure. And he wants both hands free to scoop up the gems and the jewels, and he never, ever puts his sword away when there is a man standing at his back. And so he wants Libro out there so he can go in, gather up a bunch of jewels and treasure, and then come back and get Libro, and then Libro can come in and do whatever it is he's going to do. Libro's kind of a funny name, isn't it? Every time I say it, I want to go, "Libro, Libro, my bro, Libro." Anyway, turn to page 6 of the comic, page 4 of the story, and it's another splash page. Conan is very small in this splash page. It's mainly just a scene, landscape. Is that right? No, not landscape. It's not widescreen. It's just what I'm trying to say is we're looking at the city from the outside, basically, as Conan goes in. And in the foreground of this page, we see dead bodies, skeletons, mummified corpses, who look like they've all died violently. And Conan, as he's entering the city, he can't help but think of Acheron, for example, a city that fell 3,000 years ago, some people say. He thinks of Atlantis, that fell 50 centuries earlier. He thinks of those cities, but he feels like this city, Abba Ben Zarr, feels older even than those cities, which, I mean, I'm sorry. Maybe there's a magic spell upon this city. They don't say it. It is ruined. There are, you know, the buildings are crumbling. They look like crap, you know. But if Acheron fell 3,000 years ago, and this city, Conan feels, to him, it feels older, why would any of these structures even still be standing? Why would there still be corpses, even mummified corpses? It just, I don't know, it's kind of silly. I should probably have said right at the outset, this is probably one of my least favorite of the issues in the series so far. And there's a number of things, and by number, maybe two or three, that I'm going to point out as we go along. This idea here that this city may be older than 3,000 years old, I'm not a big fan. I don't know. I don't understand that. Again, unless everything is covered with a magical shield, which is possible. Because even after 3,000 years, time and weather could get through the shield and start deteriorating things. But yeah, still. Go to page 7 of the comic, page 5 of the story. Conan is in the city. He seems to be sprinting through the city, which, I don't know, again, doesn't make a lot of sense. They mention in the narration in the previous page that something about the city gives Conan basically the willies, right? It makes him feel uncomfortable. And yet he's here sprinting through the city, which I guess kind of makes sense, because if you're going to search a city that makes you, terrifies you to the bones just by being in there, if you're going to search it, you're going to want to do it fast. But at the same time, I feel like Conan would be a bit more cautious than just running full tilt through the city, through the streets with a sword in his hand. But eventually he comes across a building where he can see flickering lights coming out of the windows, and he can hear voices from within. And so he creeps up to the building and he looks in through the window, and there's a group of men in this room sitting around a table. The table has gold and jewels, gems and whatnot in a big pile on the table. And in the middle of all that is a diamond that's like almost as big as Conan's head. It's a big, huge freaking diamond. And these thieves are sitting around this table. They're talking about how they had, I guess they plundered a caravan, and then they came to the city. They find this city and they go in to split up the loot. The boss, Tasgorian, he wants the diamond, but so does everybody else. So they're kind of arguing over how they're going to split up the booty.
Booty. Booty. Booty. That's what it is.
Turn the page. Page 10 of the comic. Page 6 of the story. The thieves are still arguing when Tasgorian suddenly stands up, tells them to douse the lights because he heard something outside. Conan kind of backs away, knowing that it wasn't him. It couldn't have been him that they heard. And yet, these thieves all burst out of the front door of the building, and they go ripping down the street. Turn the page, page 11 of the comic, page 7 of the story, and Conan is hiding basically around the corner of the building, and these dudes are just tearing down the street. Like I said, they're running in the opposite direction. And so Conan's pretty happy about that, because they did leave one guy behind. Shouldn't be too hard for him to go in and get that treasure. But he suddenly hears a sound, and he turns as an arm comes into view from around the corner of this building. Conan grabs the arm, grabs it by the wrist, pulls the person around the corner, and he's getting ready to beat the crap out of him. They're wearing a big, like, silvery white robe with a hood. The hood falls away, and we discover that it's a woman. And she also has, like, silvery white hair. Conan demands to know what it is she's doing there. She's not able to really answer at that point, because suddenly the thieves apparently have turned around and they're back. They have spotted both Conan and the woman, and they're ready to throw down. Turn the page, page 14 of the comic, page 8 of the story. Conan tears into these thieves. He just, you know, kind of a shock and awe campaign. He just leaps at him, smacks one guy across the face with the flat of his sword, kicks one guy in the chest, and then he grabs the woman and they run. She kind of wonders out loud why he's running. She says to him,
"You amuse me, stranger. You're mightier than any one of them. You wield a sword as if it were of your own arm, yet you flee from battle."
Conan replies,
"As a lion flees a field too full of leopards. Besides, there are things I would learn from you in more quiet surroundings, such as how a silver-haired wench came alone to this city of death."
She tells him that she can't really talk about it, but they keep running. And as they're running, they've lost the thieves. If they're chasing them, they're somewhere else. But as they're running, suddenly Conan senses something, and the narration says,
"No civilized man could say for certain just why Conan halts his headlong flight. How he knows that a silent, unmoving form lurks just around the next shadowed corner. And while a softer man was pondering such a riddle, Conan would already be rounding that corner, soundlessly, yet ready to strike."
Now, at this point, we can see that there's somebody hiding around the corner of another building. We turn the page to page 15 of the comic, page 9 of the story, and we find that the dude who's creeping around the other side of this building is Libro.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
A long time ago, in a comic book rack far, far away. During the years between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Marvel Comics kept the Star Wars magic alive, delivering bold new stories, expanding the mythology, and taking our favorite heroes and villains on unforgettable adventures. Now join me, the irredeemable Shag, and an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we journey back to this incredible era. We begin with a comic adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back and continue through the thrilling tales leading up to Return of the Jedi. If you're a seasoned Star Wars veteran who knows your Shira Bree from your hoojibs, or a brave explorer venturing into these comics for the first time, this is your hyperspace lane to classic Star Wars adventure. Join us for Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi, every other month on the Fire & Water Podcast Network, beginning in June 2025.
Hey there, comic fans and children of the 80s. My name is Steven, and I would like to invite you to join me on another G.I. Joe podcast. If you grew up yelling, "Yo, Joe," or flipping through dog-eared issues of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, this is the show for you. Each episode, we're tackling one issue of the classic Marvel comic series, starting all the way back in 1982. We'll break down the stories, the artwork, the characters, the wild twists, the covert missions, everything that made this series one of the most surprisingly rich comic runs of the decade. We'll follow the rise of Snake Eyes, the schemes of Cobra Commander, the battles, the vehicles, the ninjas, the chaos, and the totally over-the-top, totally awesome storytelling that defined 80s action. Whether you're reliving your childhood or discovering these comics for the first time, I'm here to guide you through it all with excitement, insight, and plenty of nostalgia. So grab your gear and join the team, because the mission begins now. Yo, Joe!
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
Conan admonishes him, demands to know why he's in the city when he told him to wait out at the outskirts. And in fact, what they say here in this first panel on this page 15 of the comic, page 9 of the story, Conan says,
"Libro, I told you to mind my horse."
Libro responds,
"And so I did, by bringing him to yonder stable."
So here's another problem I have with this comic. When Conan told him to wait out there, he didn't say anything about his horse. He didn't even say, "Wait here with my horse." He certainly didn't say, "Stay here and mind my horse." He just told him, "Stay here. You know, I don't want you with me because I'm going to want to put my sword down while I scoop up treasure. And I don't want you, you know, I don't know who you are. I don't want you at my back when I'm unarmed." And yet they're trying to, I don't know. It's like Roy's trying to establish that Libro might be a little, you know, a little clever guy because he took what Conan said and twisted it by saying, well, you told me to mind your horse, so I brought it into this stable. But again, he didn't tell him to mind his horse unless they did it off panel, which if that's the case, I don't like that. It doesn't make me happy. I can't explain why. But this is where we learn that the woman calls herself Alonia, and Conan has her stay behind there in the stable with Libro so that he can go back to that original building where all the jewels and, more importantly, the diamond, where it was earlier. He wants to go back and get all of that. And so he takes off, and Alonia and Libro have a short little conversation.
You promised him treasure? Beware, Libro, lest you find you've bitten off more than you may devour.
You'll not thwart me. Not after all this time. You'll see. You'll see.
So they obviously know each other. We just don't know how at this point. Conan runs through the streets once more. We turn to page 16, page 10 of the story. Conan arrives at the building. The only person left behind is Tasgorian. Conan climbs in through a window and literally leaps from the windowsill with his sword held backwards like a stabbing knife. And so he's leaping from the windowsill, both arms outstretched, both hands holding onto the hilt of the blade, the blade pointing downwards, and I guess just leaps atop this guy and skewers him. We don't see it because, again, this can't be too graphic being under the Comics Code Authority, but he obviously kills the dude, and he's not able to start gathering up treasure because as he's standing there holding this dead body, he's I don't know why he's holding him, but that's when the other thieves burst in. And at the bottom of the page, first panel, bottom of the page, we get another moment that I don't like, that for some reason makes me angry. Because the panel is the face of the man, the face that Conan bashed with the flat of his blade. And the art, I guess he's got kind of a cut across the bridge of his nose, and there's a few tiny trickles of blood dripping down from that cut. But the guy says,
it was that one's blade which laid open my face to the bone. And by Dark Erlich, before he dies, I'll be a god of beauty compared to what's left of him.
And so you hear something like that. His blade laid open my face to the bone. You would expect a much more gruesome wound than what literally looks like a small cut with a razor that's dripping three or four small rivulets of blood down his nose. And again, I don't think there was really any point to making such a comment when the art is actually showing something completely different. It doesn't make sense, especially since the art would have come first. Roy would have been scripting this dialogue based off of what we're seeing here in this panel. And I don't know, maybe he saw this page when it was penciled. It hadn't been inked yet or colored or anything. And maybe just the pencils gave more of an impression that the wound was much more dire than it looks here on the actual comic. But I don't know, I thought that was dumb. But Conan is able to snatch up the giant diamond, and he is holding it in one hand with his sword in the other, and he tells these thieves that there's no reason for them to fight. All he wants is this diamond. They can take everything else. There's so much for them to take. He's going to take the diamond. They can take everything else, and they can just walk away without having to kill each other. But nah, the guy's already angry at Conan for smacking him in the face with his sword, and so they turn him down. Turn the page, page 17 of the comic, page 11 of the story, and Conan slashes his sword across the table. He basically kind of hooks up a bag that has a bunch of the jewels and the gold in it, and he flings it up in the air to cause a distraction. He starts kicking and punching and slashing, and he picks up a table, and he rams it into the thieves as a group. He's killed a couple already, and he slams this table into them, smashing them against the wall. And by the next page, he's running down the street. He's escaped. Again, he's outnumbered. There's no reason for him to try and fight. He's just trying to get away at this point. He's got the diamond. He's tucked it into a pouch, and he's run away. He's running down the street. He's being chased by the thieves. He gets to the stable where Libro is, and he tells Libro,
you promised me a treasure undreamed of. Right now, that would be my life.
Libro responds,
as I always meant that it should be, barbarian. What shimmering baubles do not pale beside life itself?
And so, to save Conan's life, he conjures up a giant demon. Here's another part of the story that I didn't like, because the demon face on the cover is colored red. The demon here within the comic, he's more of a purple gray, and I don't like it. I liked the red. Why show me a red, scary-ass looking demon face on the cover and then give me a purplish gray, kind of scary demon within the comic? There's no reason for that, and it just makes me angry. Anyway, the demon starts laying into the thieves, killing them all. And then when you turn the page to page 19 of the comic, page 13 of the story, it reaches out and it grabs Conan up in its massive hand. It's a big freaking demon. Conan fits in his hand like a Barbie doll, basically. And Conan starts yelling at Libro. You know, he's like, tell this thing to put me down. You said that you were going to save my life. And Libro points out that the only reason that this demon would have grabbed Conan is because it senses that Conan has the diamond on him. And that's the one thing that Libro wants. And so he explains that technically he did save his life. He saved his life from the thieves. Now his life is being threatened by the demon. If he saved him now, it would be like saving him a second time. So he only promised to save him the one time. And so Conan is really pissed. He calls him the son of a Hyperborean. And Libro is standing down there on the ground between this demon's feet. And he's kind of, you know, he's being a cocky bad guy. And he doesn't notice that one of the thieves isn't actually dead. He's dying. He's about to die. But with his last breath, all he can think about as a dying man, what the narration tells us is,
time, they say, can stand still. If so, this is one of those moments when it does so. When a dying brain, drowning in its own hatred as surely as its own lifeblood, can power an arm, a hand, a hard-hurled dagger, thus slaying the one who has brought it low and leaving his final curse unspoken, unguessed, for all eternity.
Basically, this guy, he's dying, and his brain is still looking for revenge, so he's able to pick up a knife and throw it and get Libro right in the back. Turn the page, skip over some ads. We're now on page 22 of the comic, page 14 of the story, and Libro's dead. First of all, unless this guy had really great aim, usually this kind of stuff I tend to forgive, but because there's so much other stuff in this story that's driving me crazy, I have to point this out too. So it looks like a sword at this point is sticking out of Libro's back. Libro's dead. The sword must have, in some bizarre coincidence, sliced into his back, like right around where a lung or his heart was, so that he's killed instantly, which I guess can happen, but I don't know. I've always found that kind of stuff kind of drives me crazy when somebody is stabbed once with a knife and they just immediately die, which, again, isn't going to happen unless they are stabbed somewhere that is a lethal area of their body. But with Libro dead, the demon is out of control. Alonia creeps up and very gently touches the demon, like, on its calf. At the very same time that she's doing that, Conan is still being crushed in the thing's hand, and he uses all of his strength to bring his sword down upon that hand in like a mighty blow, and the thing just bursts apart, shatters like it was made of glass. Conan falls to the ground and immediately is up on his feet, and he's kind of getting into Alonia's face. He knows that she's the one that did whatever she did to cause the beast to shatter when he hit it with his sword, and so he wants to know who she really is, but she demands that he give her the diamond first. I mean, this all happens in one panel, and it seems very silly. It's, you know, I understand that they're trying to rush at this point to get the whole story in because they wanted it to be 15 pages to go into something else. But in this one panel, Conan's holding the diamond and he says,
this was your doing, Alonia. Now suppose you tell me who you really are.
The diamond, please, first.
Well, I guess you've earned it.
And so then he hands over the diamond. She's really happy to have the diamond. She calls it a lifestone. And she explains that this gem, the lifestone, gave Libro power over her for centuries. And then he lost it, and now it's found its way back to her. Conan wants to know what the heck she's talking about because the diamond came from a plundered caravan. And that's when she kind of explodes and just disappears. So we turn the page, page 23 of the comic, page 15 of the story, the final page of the story, and we now see Alonia's face in the sky. But what the narration tells us...
And suddenly she is there, not on Earth, perhaps not even in the sky in truth, but in the far dark places of his mind.
And she tells Conan that she is the goddess Ishtar, the goddess of fire and flesh, and that Libro was once her priest back in the days when gods and mortals walked hand in hand. Libro at some point steals this life stone and takes control over, and he uses that to make himself rich and make himself practically immortal. But then he loses the gem. They don't tell us exactly how that happens, but we can guess based on the story that these thieves, that he was part of a caravan, and these thieves plundered the caravan. They took the diamond. But this city, this lost city of Abba Ben Zarr, it's her city. She calls it her city. And Libro knew that once he is separated from this diamond, that the diamond is going to come to this city somehow. He knows that these thieves that took the diamond, the life stone is going to implant an idea within the minds of these thieves to find this city, to take the diamond to this city. And so that's what they do. But now that she had got the diamond back and she's back to her full power, she declares that even though there is new treasure within the walls of Abba Ben Zarr, because whatever treasure was plundered from the caravan beyond the diamond is now within the walls, but she declares that no precious stone shall ever leave this city, my city. And then she kind of fades away into the starlight. Conan looks up at the sky for a while, and then he goes to work gathering up the jewels. He's like, I'm going to take all this treasure anyway. And he bags it all up, and he's about to leave, and he looks up again at the sky, and he remembers, you know, for just a moment, her saying that no precious stone shall ever leave this city again. And cooler heads prevail, and he drops the bag, and he walks out of the city with no treasure at all. And that's how the issue ends. Again, probably my least favorite of all the Conan issues so far. The art was fine. I mean, it wasn't great. There's a in the letters column of, I think, issue 44, a lot of people write in to complain about this issue, that the art wasn't great and the story sucked and blah, 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 blah. And Roy is even in there answering those letters, and he admits that, yeah, the story wasn't great. And he says at one point that maybe Ernie Chan and Rich Buckler, maybe working together, it just didn't mesh the way it does with other pencilers and inkers. But yeah, I think across the spectrum, this is a not a very highly thought of issue. Some of the other problems I had with this is just the way it was laid out. There's a lot of caption boxes that are, they just look weird. They're not quite in the panels. I don't like the way that the story itself was laid out. I don't like the lettering, the way that some of the captions, some of the narration boxes look like maybe for the first couple lines, they're trying to center the letters and then they go askew on the third line and then go back to center. It's just weird. It's just a lot of it looks really weird. And yeah, it was fun. I always like Conan searching lost cities for gold and never actually walking away with any, because that seems to be a theme at this point. You think he'd learn by now, but all in all, not my favorite. Like I said, my least favorite, to tell the truth, but yet it still had its moments. But that, folks, is all I have to say about Conan the Barbarian number 40, The Fiend from the Forgotten City. If you have anything you'd like to add, let me know. The easiest way to do that is by email. The address is feedback@hithercameconan.com. So shoot me a line, and maybe I'll read it out in a future episode.
Everybody out!
In our next episode, Conan returns to Zamora, and in a small desert village, he comes across a group of villagers determined to kill a beautiful girl. Will Conan fight a big bunch of people and save the girl? That's next time when we dive into Conan the Barbarian number 41, The Garden of Death and Life, published in May of 1974. The synopsis used in this episode was taken from MarvelFandom.com and then rewritten by me. The information used in this episode comes from Wikipedia, along with Mike's Amazing World of Comics at Mike'sAmazingWorld.com, the Grand Comic Book Database at comics.org, and the book Barbarian Life, A Literary Biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, by Roy Thomas, which you can get now at SumerianPress.com. And finally, the views and opinions expressed within this episode are mine and mine alone, and do not reflect the official policy or position of Marvel Comics, Roy Thomas, the Howard Estate, Conan, his sword, his steely thews, his many fans and supporters, and especially his god, Krom.
Krom laughs at your four winds.
So until next time, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and as always, be nice to each other. Oh yeah. Fuck ice! Bye!
We would like to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. We would also like to invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Hither Came Conan early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to hithercameconan.com to sign up today. Hither Came Conan is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by Stephen, check out somanypodcasts.com. All links will be in the show notes.
Hello and welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jewel thrones of Hyboria in a big bag of poop. Good God, 62 episodes in and I still cannot remember to take a huge breath right before that. Conan is crossing the sun-scorched wastes between Turin. Conan is crossing the sun-scorched... The old man, Libro, begs Conan to take him to the lost city. I didn't write that down. I didn't write it down. Gotta find it. The old man, Libro, begs Conan to lead. While the plot that Resnick submitted could have been turned into a full 19-page story for the Conan. Good God almighty.
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.
Great Krom.